Does Joe Douglas have the Jets moving in the right direction? What should we make of Mekhi Becton? And could a surprise contributor shake up the tight end room? We'll discuss all of this and more on today's mailbag edition of the Locked On Jets podcast.
You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome. This is the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. It's Friday, June 24th, 2022, and I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Thanking you for making the show your first listen or your first watch. We're free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Big shout out to subscribers to this podcast. And to join that group, all you have to do is hit the subscribe button. You'll receive notifications as new episodes are posted, so you'll never miss an episode. If you're watching on YouTube, please give the episode a big thumbs up. Helps the channel out, and it helps other Jets fans find Locked On Jets. Today we have a mailbag show. Thanks to everybody who sent in questions. Let's begin. And our first question is about the Jets general manager, Joe Douglas. John, I really got into the NFL when Rex Ryan was hired. Since then, it's never really felt like the Jets had a plan to build sustainable success like the Patriots, Ravens, or Steelers do. We always made the splash moves that helped short term, but led us to being one of the worst franchises in the NFL. I get a very different feeling about this team now. The Jets have made big signings, but they were not market-setting signings. They used their draft capital to move up and down the board. Now we have good young playmakers on both sides of the ball, and we are not just relying on a quarterback to save the franchise every play. With that said, do you think the Jets finally got this right from a team-building perspective, enough that we should be a competitive team this year? Well, I kind of feel like there are two ways you judge a front office. The first way is the plan good? And the second way is the plan well executed? And if the plan is not good, it really doesn't matter how the execution is because it's just not going to work out. And if you look in recent years, the Jets have had really bad plans from their front offices. I mean, I think this kind of goes back to Mike Tannenbaum, who had a lot of early success and made a lot of good early draft picks. But near the end, with Rex Ryan, and I think like looking back on it, Tannenbaum and Rex were like a bad fit for each other. Because I think Tannenbaum kind of gave Rex everything he wanted, and Rex was not really a big-picture coach, and I feel like they both would have been served with... I mean, they both had skills, and maybe they would have been served with somebody different. Tannenbaum probably would have been better served with a coach with a little bit more patience, and Rex, I think, would have been better served by with a GM who had a bigger-picture perspective and was willing to tell him no. Because near the end of the Tannenbaum era, the Jets were never the Jets were pretty much just like completely short-sighted with all the moves they made. They did not care about how a move would impact them a year or two down the line. It was all about this year. And eventually they just kind of like ran out of talent, they ran out of time, and things really did not work out. John Idzik took over. I feel like John Idzik's plan in broad strokes was not bad, but I think this was a case where maybe the implementation left something to be desired. But even then, like, I really did not understand a lot of the aspects of the way Idzik was doing anything. Now, if you're a longtime listener, you know I'm not a big fan of, like, big spending in free agency. But Idzik took it to, like, such an extreme where, you know, in 2014, the Jets' biggest need was at the cornerback position. And they signed Dimitri Patterson. And it was a really good group of free agent corners. I mean, that was the type of year where, like, there are years where you go in and I say, you have to get a player at this position in free agency. I said that a couple of years back with the Jets at the center position, where it's, like, such a glaring need, and there's a player there who seems like... there were so many players the Jets could have signed in 2014. That, like, Idzik took it to, like, this weird extreme, and then he also did not really address the receiver position that offseason. He signed Eric Decker, but there were some other good receivers he passed on, and it was a loaded group at the receiver position in the draft, and the Jets did not take a receiver until the fourth round. And there were lots of really good receivers who went that year in the draft. So even though, like, Idzik's plan in broad strokes kind of made sense because it was a build through the draft, patience type thing, he made some very odd choices. And then, like, after neglecting receiver, aside from Eric Decker that offseason, they trade for Percy Harvin when the team's out of contention, which really made no sense, and Harvin was not really a guy you wanted to trade for. Then came Mike Maccagnan. I mean, there was no plan with Mike Maccagnan. I don't know any other way to put it. I still have no idea what Mike Maccagnan was trying to accomplish during his tenure with the team. I look now with Joe Douglas, and I see, like, a guy who really committed to a rebuild. I think that the plan is good. look at this. He came in 2019. He saw the team needed to be torn down. And I'll say this for Joe Douglas. The Jets finished 6-2 the second half of 2019. Lots of GMs in that situation are going to spend big the next offseason in free agency. They're going to think we're close. We won 7 last year. If we spend big, we'll get to 10. We'll make the playoffs. Joe Douglas did not do that. Joe Douglas was very cautious in the offseason because he knew that that 6-2 finish was a mirage. What he did was he built draft picks. You know, he compiled draft picks. And part of this was, you know, Jamal Adams, if he wanted to be here, I think Joe Douglas would have paid him. I think Jamal Adams, so Joe Douglas did help. Joe Douglas did get draft picks for trading Jamal Adams in part because Jamal Adams did not want to be here. I don't think Joe Douglas's plan was to get, you know, to trade Jamal Adams, but Douglas has shown a real tendency to try and add draft picks and try and build through the draft. And in free agency, he's made targeted moves. Now, sometimes to even my chagrin, and again, I'm not a big like guy who believes in spending big in free agency, but I think there are points where like even I'm like, this guy's a little too cautious in free agency. But the moves have made sense. You've seen a real commitment to building up the offensive line, which was a huge weakness when Joe Douglas arrived. And no matter what you say, and listen, there are legitimate criticisms of the job Joe Douglas has done. One thing I think you can say is that he's done a good job fixing the offensive line. And, you know, the Jets have finally committed to a rebuild. And that's, you know, I go back to these other GMs. Outside of maybe Idzik, like, nobody's really committed to a rebuild. Now, the Jets have thrown the word rebuild around a lot, but they never really made the moves. They never really sacrificed short-term gains to try and build something for the long haul. And that means, you know, stockpiling draft picks. That means showing restraint in free agency. So I look at this. I think Joe Douglas has a good plan. Now, the question with Joe Douglas is the implementation of this plan. Are you, you know, it's easy to say you make targeted signings in free agency. Are these the right signings? It's easy to stockpile draft picks. Are you drafting the right guys? And the jury's very much out. And I think if we're being honest right now, to date, more bad than good right now as far as Joe Douglas's talent evaluation goes. Now, the first couple of years, they're the least important years for any GM. And really, the choices he's made this offseason, you know, last year, Zach Wilson, that's obviously a key one. But the choices he made this year when he had 4 picks in the top 40, when he spent fairly big in free agency, these are the types of choices that will define his tenure. So even though there's been lots of swings and misses, like if we're going to be honest here, and I think you have to be fair, I don't think you can say it's been all good with Joe Douglas. I think in all honesty, there have been more misses than hits so far. But this is the important one. I mean, this is really where the game's going to be decided this offseason. And we'll find out. I think, ultimately, at the end of the day, just having a good plan, that doesn't guarantee success. But having a bad plan guarantees failure. And past general managers, I think, have had bad plans, and they've guaranteed failure. I think Joe Douglas has a good plan. And again, a good plan does not guarantee success. But having a good plan at least gives you a chance to have success, and I think that's what Joe Douglas has. Now, our next question is at the tight end position. If Cager plays well enough in training camp, do you think Wesco will be cut or sent to the practice squad? And is it typical to have 4 tight ends? I think Wesco's in trouble no matter what happens with Lawrence Cager. And if you're not familiar with Lawrence Cager, he was a player the Jets signed as an undrafted free agent 2 years ago out of Georgia. He was a wide receiver. He also played in Miami before he went to Georgia. He actually made the roster in 2020 initially, and the Jets had so many injuries, he was actually getting some starts at the receiver. He was actually seeing some playing time early that season and not looking that great. I get the impression the Jets do like Cager, though, and he's a big-bodied receiver, not that fast for the receiver position, so they kind of moved him to tight end. And I get the impression like he was playing pretty well last year. He was impressing them in training camp, and this year they decided to move him to tight end. And there's been a lot of buzz around him throughout the offseason program. I talked about him on a recent show. Now, what's Lawrence Cager going to be? I don't know. But, you know, he's a guy worth watching. It's worth paying attention to. But I think Wesco's in trouble because I don't think if you're an incumbent Jets tight end, if you were on this roster last year, you cannot feel safe based on what the Jets did this past offseason. Because they essentially overhauled the tight end room. They went out and signed 2 guys. They signed CJ Uzomah. They signed Tyler Conklin. And they drafted Cherby Ruckert. So when you bring in 3 tight ends and you use resources, I mean, I'm not saying that they're paying any of these guys like George Kittle, but if you use these kind of resources, I mean, these were the 2 tight ends they signed in free agency. These were not cheap tight ends. They weren't overly expensive tight ends, but they were not cheap tight ends. And third round, even a late third round pick, that's something of an investment. You do throw all of these resources at the tight end position. That says you really just don't think you had anything at the position. And by the way, you'd be right, because the Jets' tight end room was awful last year. So, no matter what happens with Cager, could be the guy who knocks Wesco off the team. But, like, I just can't feel good if I'm Trevon Wesco, looking at, like, all these guys they brought in, because maybe Wesco can make the team, but, like, if I'm Wesco, I'm saying, you know, or if they liked me, they wouldn't have brought in three guys. Maybe they would have brought in two guys. You know, I think, like, off the top of my head, probably, like, 3 to 4 is typically what you'd carry. So, I don't think it's ridiculous to think you'd carry 4. And Wesco could make, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Wesco could make the team, but I think there's a lot working against him right now. And Wesco really hasn't been that great. I don't think Wesco's really lived up to the hype that, I mean, when he was drafted, there was all this hype that he was going to be the next great blocking tight end in the league. And I'm not sure how much I bought it. I really was not a big fan of the pick at the time. And I don't think he's really done a whole lot that says to me that this guy's going to be a long-term player with the Jets. Now, one player that we hope will be a long-term player with the Jets is Mekhi Becton, but he has plenty of question marks enter as we move towards training camp. And we'll talk about expectations for Becton and how whether he's a long-term group player for this team as we continue on this Friday episode of Locked On Jets. Of course, the NFL season is approaching. Training camp opens in just a few weeks. And you can already place bets on the upcoming NFL season. BetOnline is your number one source for all of your sports betting needs and sports info. They have bets you can place on NFL futures. Jets getting pretty good odds. So if you make some money, if you like what Joe Douglas did this past offseason, you can find all of the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including the Stanley Cup Finals, which could be concluding tonight, and Major League Baseball. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. And BetOnline remains the best spot for all of your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to check on all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf, and basketball. When we return to basketball season, I mean, I don't know what to tell you Knicks fans out there. I think a rough night last night for the Knicks, but you know, you can bet on anything using BetOnline. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. We are just a few weeks away from the start of NFL training camp. That means it's the summer. And it's tough to remember, but winter was not that long ago. And the next winter is only a few months away. And I know if you're a business owner, you don't want to deal with the hassle of energy decisions. You just want your business to run smoothly, and you want to pay a fair rate for power. But coming off the back of that high-priced winter, if your business was on a purely variable or market rate, you paid out the nose. Many New York business owners switched suppliers out of frustration, but unless they chose alternative pricing options, they're still at risk for a January repeat this year. That's where Catalyst Power comes in. They partner with you or your trusted energy consultant to produce a power supply plan that fits your business and your market risk tolerance. They have a suite of options customizable for your business's needs, including options that bundle with or focus on renewable energy. And right now in New York, they're offering an on-site solar solution for your business that requires zero installation, maintenance, or material purchase costs. That's right, there are no CapEx costs for you. And to sweeten the deal, qualified businesses could be eligible for up to 6 months of at-cost energy supply from Catalyst Power. Go to catalystpower.com/lockedonjets to learn more. Thank you again for making Locked On Jets your first listen or your first watch. We continue now with this mailbag show on this Friday. Our next question, I feel like we're pretty close to the same age, so my question is, who has your personal favorite Jets coach been since Parcells? It's not who you think was best, but who you enjoyed the most and who you liked covering. I think the answer has got to be Rex, especially if we're going post-Parcells. I mean, the team was fun under... The last time the Jets were fun was, like, under Rex, where they were winning games. You know, they almost went to the Super Bowl a couple of times. Rex was, you know, really fun and entertaining. I mean, Rex talked like a fan. And obviously, it did not end well. And I think, you know, there are lots of reasons for that. And some of Rex's traits were kind of his undoing. But those first 2 years, I mean, those are still, like, some of the most fun Jets years I've had, where the team was, you know, going in. They were dominant defensively. You know, they could run the ball on anybody. It was a lot of fun. It's got to be Rex. And, you know, he was always entertaining with the press. So I don't think there's any question, especially post-Parcells. I mean, who are my other options? I mean, you have Al Groh, who was here a year. All right, Herm was fun. Like, Herm had some great press conferences. So I guess Herm could be your option. But, and Herm, actually, they did make the playoffs 3 out of 5 years with Herm. But I mean, I think it's a go with Rex. I mean, I would not go Mangini. Would not go Bowles. I'm trying to forget that Adam Gase was the coach of the Jets. Well, maybe Salah will be, but he's only 1 year in, and they were not successful that year. So I think Rex has to be the choice. Next question. Is the writing on the wall that this will likely be Becton's last year as a starting tackle with the team? Too much of a headache and not a part of the best culture in sports that Joe D is trying to build. If Becton fails this year, they will find a replacement. If Becton gets his act together and plays well, I bet they will trade him at peak value and not risk the yearly uncertainty of all the potential weight, drama, and injury issues. I don't know that I agree with that. Now, I do think this is a big year for Becton. I think this is a year Becton has to stay healthy. Because even that rookie year, where I'll still defend Becton's rookie year. I still think in context it was a good year. But even then, there were lots of injuries. He was banged up pretty frequently. And then last year he misses all this time. And it's not his fault. I mean, when a player gets hurt, you can really blame a player for being injury prone. No. But, the old saying goes, the best availability is availability. The best ability is availability. If Becton can't stay on the field, he's not helping the team at some point. So I don't know that it's a lock, though. If Becton starts 17 games and plays great, they're going to keep him. I don't think they're going to trade him. I don't see where they would. I mean, you have this young tackle you drafted in the first round a couple of years ago. He goes out and has a great third year. I don't think you're trading him. I think you're holding on to him. I think he's part of your future. To me, that just seems like the way to go. And I imagine that's the way the Jets would go. Now, Becton has a bad year, all bets are off. Then I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility the Jets move on. But I think I don't think it's a lock at all. I think if he has a good year, then he's going to be part of the future. I actually really don't see the logic behind moving on from Becton, who stays healthy and has a great season. Next question. Do you believe Boomer Esiason when he says he knows Mekhi came into minicamp at 395 pounds? If so, do you believe that this is a lack of focus or commitment, or that he's incapable of shedding the pounds? Reports were he was working with the nutritionists. See, this is the type of stuff I try to avoid, because, we're going to find out in a couple months whether Becton's the guy here. So, a lot of this stuff just seems like kind of drama that's, unnecessary. It's it kind of feels like it's, tabloid fodder right now. We'll know soon enough whether Becton's the guy, so I don't know. Listen, Becton's going to come into camp, and we'll see whether or not he's ready to go. We only have a couple weeks to wait, so I don't think it's worth obsessing over this stuff now. I don't really care. I'll care once the game starts. And I think, here's the thing. If Becton goes out there and dominates training camp and dominates preseason, nobody's going to care. It all comes down to what week one is really where the test for Mekhi Becton begins. So I don't care about what people are saying in the media about him. We'll see whether he's prepared heading into the season. That's when we'll know. And it's not that long. We don't have to wait 5 years to find out. Our next question. I feel like the Jets are going to get run over again this year. Is there anyone out there that they can sign who can plug into the middle of the defensive line, even if by committee, to give the defense a shot to utilize what should be a pretty solid pass rush? I do think it's a little odd that they did not replace Foley Fatukasi, who kind of played that role and had a rough year last year. I mean, that was not Foley Fatukasi's best year. He took a big step back last year. There are a couple of guys available who I think could be interesting in the middle of the defensive line. Linval Joseph is still out there. He's been a solid defensive tackle through the years. Even our old buddy Sheldon Richardson, I think, is still out there. So, I mean, there are guys you could sign. And, a run-stopping defensive tackle is not really something that's in great demand in today's NFL. You can always find a two-down lineman. So I'm not overly worried about it. But, yeah, somebody's going to have to step. And I think part of it is they're looking for better play from, Quinnen Williams this year. And, if Quinnen Williams can, get back to that 2020 form, then he'll be a big force against the run. You won't necessarily need a traditional type of nose tackle, but there are guys available if what they have doesn't work. I mean, maybe they're looking for a big jump from Jonathan Marshall, who was a sixth round pick a year ago. Very athletic guy, a guy who posted amazing numbers, athletic testing wise. So maybe they're looking for a big jump from him. I think they're definitely looking for Quinnen Williams to step back and become an impact run defender again. I think it is a concern though. I mean, I think that, they have not upgraded their front seven this year. Or I guess it's front six now, because most of the time you're playing nickel. So linebackers are not really better, and they really have not done much to upgrade. They've upgraded the edge rush. They drafted Jermaine Johnson and they signed Jacob Martin, even bringing back Vinny Curry. But it's kind of interesting how little they've done on the interior. So we'll see what happens. I would not be shocked to see a signing though. Yes, there are still some guys who could help them, and I named a couple of them. Now, ahead here on the Locked On Jets podcast, we will close out our show. We'll talk about priorities, which players should the Jets prioritize on the offensive line. We'll also talk about the idea of a potential trade. That's ahead as we close out this Friday mailbag episode here in the summer. This is the Locked On Jets podcast. On this Friday, we're doing a mailbag show. Our next question: are there any young players on this roster that you would move for a Jamal Adams-like trade return prior to the deadline? Of course, this player would need to be young in their rookie contract to be desirable enough to fetch a high return. I don't think there's anybody who would get a Jamal Adams-type return. You have to remember, Jamal Adams was coming off back-to-back all-pro seasons, and, I mean, Seattle made a terrible trade. I mean, even at the time, I remember I said, like, the Jets obviously had a strained relationship with Jamal Adams at that point. I distinctly remember saying it, even at the time, like, even if the relationship was good, Seattle gave up so much that it was almost like a deal you had to take. But I don't see anybody with the Jamal Adams pedigree that somebody's going to, like, give a crazy offer for. And the other thing is, like, what I said earlier is, you know, the Jets need young talent on this team, and the only reason the Jets, I think the biggest reason the Jets, I guess I'm contradicting myself a little bit because I just said that the Seattle gave up so much that they had to trade Jamal Adams, but I'll go back to what I said earlier, is I don't think the Jets were looking to trade Jamal Adams. I don't think they were looking to add picks. I think it was just a situation where he was unhappy, so they looked for suitors, and they ended up getting a ridiculous trade offer from Seattle, but I still think they would have re-signed him, because I don't think, you know, I'll try and reconcile my two comments here. I think if they had gotten that offer from Seattle, even if things were good, they would have taken it. But I don't think they would have gotten the offer, because I don't think they would have been shopping Jamal Adams at that point. So I think, like, ultimately, like, it came down to just Jamal Adams not wanting to be a member of the Jets. But even if they had somebody like that, I'd say, A, they need young talent. You know, you can't trade away all your young talent. Eventually, you need to have somebody you can build around. So I don't think you could do it in that sense. But B, I don't think they have anybody who would fetch that type of return for this team. And our last question: with the uncertainty surrounding Becton and the fact both Fant and McGovern are free agents next year, what's the long-term outlook at both tackle and center? And if you could only keep one of Fant or McGovern, which would you pick and why? I think I'd go McGovern. Now, I'd prioritize tackle over center, but I'm still not sold on Fant. I think, you know, Fant gave up pressure at, like, a fairly high rate last year, so I'm wondering whether he's going to regress this year. That was really his first really good year as a pro, so, like, I have concerns that Fant's going to regress this year, and I feel like there's a non-zero chance we may look back on this and feel like maybe we should have traded Fant when we had the chance, when his value was high. McGovern, I feel like, has more of a track record. I think, yeah, so I'd pick McGovern. I would not hate seeing McGovern extended. If the Jets had drafted a replacement center this year, then, like, I could see, like, letting McGovern go. But McGovern's actually a guy I'd like to see the Jets work on a contract extension with, because I still think he can play effectively for a while. But I think it's, you know, if Fant and McGovern were guys I view equally, I'd take Fant. But I still have questions about Fant in a way I don't, because I think McGovern has a better track record in the NFL. So I think McGovern should be more of the priority. That's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, hit that subscribe button and you'll never miss an episode. And please give the show a big thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back next time to talk more Jets.